Tonight is November the 9th. We are continuing with Parshas Vayishlach. And we are on pages 180 and 182. We really read through the whole story last time through 184. And the only thing we discussed last time, well, actually the only conclusion we drew last time, was that the action of Shechem, as despicable as it was not simply an act of an act of pure lust, but rather it was premeditated with the intention of trying to, by default, be included in the family of Yaakov. As the story goes on to say, that's really what they wanted, is that everybody should be one big happy family. Now, even though that's true, nevertheless, obviously the act was still the act. Now, I want you to take note of the different expressions used for Shechem's interest in Dinah. When he originally takes her, does not say anything, as we pointed out last time, doesn't say anything about her beauty or something like that. But it does say, starting in Pasuk Gimel, it says, Vatidbak nafsho bidina vas Yaakov. Verse 3. His soul became attached to Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov. That's expression number 1. Expression number 2, in the same pasuk, Vayahav es ha'na'ara. He loved the girl. We move on. In Pasuk Ches, verse 8, when Chamor speaks to Yaakov and to his sons, Vayidaber Chamor itam lemor, Chamor spoke with them, saying, Shechem b'ni choshka nafsho b'vitachem. Shechem, my son, his soul has, what did he use over here? Longs for your daughter. Longs for your daughter. That's in Ches, in 8. And then finally later on, in Pasuk Yud Tes 19, V'lo echar hanar la'asos ha'davar, the lad did not delay to do the thing, ki chafetz bevas Yaakov, for he was interested. For he was, what's the word they use here?
He wanted
the daughter of Yaakov. These four expressions, would you say that, well, what would you say is the strongest expression and the least strong expression? The first one, again, is his soul became attached. That's one. Then it says he loved. That's two. Then it says his soul desires. And then finally, he wants.
He wants.
Is which?
The strongest.
You think wants is the strongest?
Wants deeply.
I think the soul being attacked.
Yeah.
The soul is going down.
No, I think because he's a prince, if he wants, he needs to do it.
Well, that may be, he may have the prerogative that if he wants, yes, he can have what he wants. But that, what is the strongest expression of interest?
But we know, as a result of what occurred later, I think the latter one stands out. Because it most respected for all of his father's household. That's what it was after.
Well, that he was most respected, that's true. But his interest in Dinah was he wanted.
Mm-hmm. He wanted it because of her affiliation with the family.
Well, that we're going to show anyway. That's true. But you do, yes?
I think love, and then it went downward. I think once he had her,
well, it's difficult because the English is not an exact translation as usual. It's very difficult to pin down the English. But in Hebrew, the expressions diminish in their intensity. It begins with his soul became attached. Vatidbak nafsho. Dvekus means an attachment. like with glue, is to be dovek, right? His soul became attached to Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. He loved the girl. Okay? Love, you can translate it, you can understand it a number of ways. Then...
I said there was not something such as love in the Torah.
Well,
this is the first time we see that.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. We find love in the Torah.
No, but
love between
wrong.
A man and a woman.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
that's what I'm supposed.
The question you have to ask yourself is this love real love or not?
Right.
He loved the girl. Then it says later that his soul became. It says desire. Chashka desired her, and then finally he wanted her. The expressions are diminishing in their intensity. It certainly brings out the point that when one acts in the way that Shechem did, then that interest that he has in her will quickly diminish, and that although he may still have had a material interest, meaning the ability to be able to connect with Yaakov's family and all the benefits that would reap, but the interest in Dina herself seems to have diminished over the very short time that we're discussing over here. It's only a day, two, whatever it is. It's not that much time between the first expression and fourth expression that are mentioned here in the Torah.
Knowing what I know of later stories, I would expect him to hate her.
You're saying from the story of Amnon and Tamar.
Where after he raped her.
Right, that's the only other story.
Yeah.
Yeah, excuse me. In that case, there's two differences. One is that in that case, his only interest was his physical interest in her. There was nothing else over there other than that. Over here, there is more. And the second difference is that Amnon himself was basically a righteous person who then fell. So once he committed the act and then gained control of himself, he hated her because of what it meant to him, how it had ruined him because of his own his weakness. Over here, Shechem doesn't have any regrets. This is, Shechem would act this way with anybody. He doesn't care.
Okay, so if you feel like the strongest emotion was the first description of it being the soul attached, he felt an attachment, if it had remained at that level, then are you saying that the other three sentences mentioning how he felt about her would not have been written?
Either they wouldn't have been written, or they would have just mimicked the same expression.
Because what could have been higher than his soul being attached to him?
Right.
So they could, yeah.
So they would either not been written, or just the same expression have been written again. Now, we're going to have to go through the progression of how things happened over here. As I mentioned last time, Yaakov and his sons, he waits for them to come from the field. Then they sort of take over the negotiations. As we said, clearly Yaakov's sons are the ones negotiating from a position of strength, despite the fact that Shechem had Dina in his house. They say, well, if you don't do what we say, we're going to take her and leave. Clearly, they don't have any fear of Shechem, and it's the other way around. Shechem feels the need to do what they have to say, which is they say, circumcise, okay, fine, I'll circumcise. So, before we get into that whole discussion, we need here to pause and examine two statements that our sages make about this story. Now, I have to caution that we have to have a little bit of an introduction here about this sort of thing. Our sages, Chazal, are going to place blame. They're going to place a little bit of blame on Dina and a little bit of blame on Yaakov. Now, we have to understand, what does it mean when they place blame? We, of course, understand full well that we are not judgmental of other people. The reason we're not judgmental of other people is because you never really know what's going on in somebody else. See, the culture that we live in is not judgmental of other people because you can't really be wrong. In America, you can't really be wrong because there's always a justification for everything. Unless you do something which compromises my rights, you really can't be wrong. And so we are taught in our popular culture not to be judgmental because there's really all right and wrong is relative. We don't believe that. We believe there is a right and there is a wrong. And it's not a relative right and wrong. There is clear right and there's clear wrong. There's schar v'onesh, there's reward and punishment. But the reason we're not judgmental is because we don't know whether the person is really guilty inside. Because we don't know what's going on inside of them. We don't know what kinds of difficulties they have. We don't know what kinds of what their background is, and we don't know what is going on inside of them and how what kind of external pressures there are on the person. So that's why we're not judgmental, unless the situation is so grossly evident that the person is evil. We are judgmental of very evil people. We don't have to go as far back as the Holocaust. We can stick with Arafat and his ilk to be judgmental. But typically, we're not judgmental of other people. When Chazal place blame, they are able to do so because they're not coming from their own assessment, they're coming from the Torah. And the Torah can be judgmental, as we find many times the Torah is judgmental. The Torah will say that so-and-so did something wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong for hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. Now we know Moshe Rabbeinu, on his level, whatever the sin was, is not something that we can easily relate to, but nevertheless, we know that he did something wrong, whatever that means. So the Torah is not limited by our ignorance. We are ignorant of what's going on inside of people's heads and people's minds and people's hearts. The Torah is not. So, therefore, our sages in the Torah Shebaal Peh, in the oral Torah, can place blame. That's number one that we have to understand. This is not when they place blame, they're not making a suggestion, they're telling us a point in fact. That this is the fact. That's number one. Number two, another reason why we're not judgmental is because we know that when something happens between people, there's always different aspects to it. And you can have two, three, four people who are involved in something, and the blame is primarily person A's fault, but it can also be partially B, C, and D's fault. So, when here we're going to find that the victim, Dina, is going to receive some blame, Chazal do not mean to say that Shechem did nothing wrong. They don't even mean to say that Dina was 50% the problem. What Chazal mean to say is, Shechem did an evil, despicable act. He is to blame. He deserved being killed as he will be in the end. But there is a very, very small measure of blame that can be attached to Dina. Why would Chazal do that? And why would they have license to do that? Because Dina, as well as Yaakov, were great tzaddikim. And as we always find, whenever we deal with tzaddikim, then even the slightest infraction is pointed out by our sages. Because that's how we learn from them. So the point over here is not to go place blame on the victim. It is to show us that this great tzaddikess, this great righteous woman, Dina, did have something which did lead to what happened. And we need to learn from that in order that we be better people. Now, what do they actually say? What do Chazal say over here about Yaakov and about Dina? So they say two things, and they may be conflicting. Number one, let's take Yaakov. You know what, Dina is more obvious. Let's take Dina first. Chazal point out the very first word of this story is Vateitse. In Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Vateitse Dina bas Leah. Dina, the daughter of Leah, went out. Why did she go out? Did she go out for some terrible purpose? No. She went out, Liros bivnos haaretz, to see in the daughters of the land. Pretty innocuous, but that's what she did. The Gemara tells us that why does it say that it's Dina Bas Leah, Dina the daughter of Leah? That we know Dina's the daughter of Leah. Anybody who's read the past Parshas, Parsha Vayetze, knows that it's the daughter of Leah. So Chazal tell us that Dina was a Yatsonis Bas Yatsonis. She was a going outer, the daughter of a going outer. Just as her mother Leah went out, so too Dina went out. Now, where did we find that Leah, Dina's mother, went out?
With the Dudaim.
Good, good. Be more specific.
It was being brought in the Dudaim and she traded it.
She traded it.
She could have Yaakov that night instead of...
Right. Good, good, good. But when did she actually go out? You're right. You're in the right place. You're correct.
To meet him, to tell him.
She went out to meet him.
That he should come to her that night.
Hold the place over here. Look back on page 156.
Is this
an Amida Kenegad Mida? Yes. Not exactly Mida. We'll see exactly. That means measure for measure. We'll see in a minute exactly how you fit this in. Page 156, verse 16, Pasuk Tes Zayin. This is after trading the night with Yaakov for the flowers. Vayavo Yaakov min ha-sadeh bo'erev. Yaakov came from the field at night. Vateitse le'ah likraso. And Leah went out to greet him. Vatomer, and she said, Eli tavo, you shall come to me. Ki sachar secharticha, for I have hired you, or I've paid for you. Bedudoe v'ni, with the flowers of my son. So here, Leah, it says, Vateitse. Now, what's so significant about that? What's so significant that Leah went out to greet Yaakov, and here, Dina went out? So the Gemara tells us that it is not the way of a woman to go out, to be a yatsanis, to go out. And we have to define what that means, to go out. What does that mean? It means you can't go out the front door? What does that mean, you can't go out? But it's not the way of a woman to go out. Now, this concept, that it's not the way of a woman to go out, is not something which is based on society, or on culture, or even on the being Jewish. This idea, this concept, that a woman should not be one who goes out, is actually already mentioned, it's already alluded to, in the very creation of the world itself. If you again hold the place, and go back to the very beginning in Bereishis, this is, after all, the class of creation. Let's go back to page 8. Pasuk Chavches, verse 28, after the creation of man and woman, says in Chavzayin in 27, Zachar u'nekeva bara usam, he created them male and female, created man, male and female. Pasuk Chavches, 28, Vayavarach usam Elokim, and God blessed them, man and woman. Vayom Elohim Elokim, and God said to them, Pru urvu, be fruitful and multiply, umil'u es ha'aretz, and fill up the land, v'chiv shuha, and conquer it, which means, and tame it. Bring the entire world under your control. Man and woman are told in the beginning of creation that your job on this earth is to bring the world under your control. The world should not be ruled by animals. The world should not be ruled by trees or plants. The world should be ruled by man. The Chiv Shuha. Conquer it. It's yours to conquer. Rashi here cites Chazal, who point out that there's a letter missing from the word v'chiv shuha. Which letter is missing from the word v'chiv shuha? Not a yud, but you're close. A vav. Normally you would spell it with a vav between the shin and the hey. V'chiv shuha. Instead, the vav has been removed, and in place of the vav, you have a shuruk, which is that three dots underneath the shin to make the u sound. Not a shuruk, a kubutz, excuse me. A kubutz underneath the shin to make the u sound. Vechiv shuha. So why is there no vav over here? So Chazal tell us because this word can then be read vechav sha. Vechav sha means and subdue her. Rather than subdue it, vechiv shuha, you plural, should subdue the world. It can also be read vechav sha, you, meaning the man, should subdue her, the woman. Now, this is before the sin. This is prior to the sin of eating from the tree. Which means that there is not yet this the curse against man, the curse against woman, the various curses that have meted out. This is before that. And before the sin, when the whole concept of morality is different, the whole concept of tznius, of they weren't wearing clothing, for example, and it didn't bother anybody not to wear clothing. It didn't mean anything to wear clothing. Yet, there still is a concept of v'chav shah, he should subdue her. Now, in what way should he subdue her? What does that mean? Should he tie her up? What does it mean he should subdue her? So Chazal tell us, Rashi tells us over here, I will read you the Rashi. Rashi says, chaser vav, there's a vav lacking, l'lamecha, to teach you, shehazachar kovish es hanekeva, that the male should subdue the female, shelo tehe yatsanis, that she should not be a going outer. That means all the way back to the beginning of creation, embedded in creation itself, is this notion that a woman should not be a going outer. Yeah?
I still don't understand. Leah just came to greet her husband, so why...
Okay, so we're going to discuss it. We're still going through it. You're right, 100%. You have a good question. So what's the big deal over here with Leah?
Okay.
So, what does it mean to be a going outer? Now, it seems somewhat stifling. A man is a going outer, he's a yotze, and a woman should not be a yatsanis, she should not be a going outer. But really, it's a double-edged sword. It cuts both ways. Let me give you an example. We know that the Moab and Ammon nations are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. If a man from Moab or from Ammon would convert and become Jewish, today we don't know who they are. So we assume every convert is not from Moab or Ammon. But theoretically, if we would know who the Moab and Ammon nation are in the time of Gemara, they did. The time of the Beis HaMikdash, they knew. So if a man from Moab and Ammon would convert and become Jewish, they would not be allowed to marry a regular Jewish woman. And their sons would not be allowed to marry a regular Jewish woman, nor were their grandsons, nor were their great-grandsons, nor for all generations. Moab and Ammon men, even after they convert, cannot marry a regular Jewish woman. Why not? So the Torah tells us why not. The Torah in Parshas Kisei, say later on, tells us the reason why not is because when we left Egypt, Moab and Ammon are related to us. How are they related to us?
They are Lot's grandsons,
or sons, right? It's through Lot and his daughters, they had Moab and Ammon. Yeah. So they're our cousins. When we left Egypt, Moab and Ammon, as our cousins, should have greeted us when we passed by their lands with food and drink, with bread and water. That's what they should have done. But instead, they did not come out to greet us with bread and water. The pasuk says, "Al-davar shalo kidmu eschem balechem uvamayim baderech b'tzeischem b'Mitzrayim," because they did not come out to greet you with bread and water after our ancestor Abraham saved them from destruction in Sodom. They would never have come to be had their mother and father been killed in Sodom. It's only because of our ancestor Abraham that they were saved. They owe us for their very existence. And yet, when we left Mitzrayim and we were going to Israel, they wanted nothing to do with us. All they wanted was for us to be destroyed. And in fact, they went and hired who? They hired Bilam to curse us. So they didn't even, not only did they not repay the kindness that our ancestor did for them, but they even went and hired Bilam to curse us, which of course didn't work. And therefore, they are banned. They're banned. They can become converts, but they cannot marry in. They are forever. We don't want anything to do with them. We cannot have their line mixing in with our line.
So what about the women?
But the women can. The women can. Yes, go ahead.
Isn't it better to not accept any converts for fear that you may be accepting some?
Here we use Rove. We use majority. That's always
the majority is not? Yeah. You're just assuming that?
Well, we know the majority is not. The majority of the world is not them. So, but the women of Moab and Ammon can not only convert, but join us. They can marry into us. And we know not only can they, but they did, and they did in a big way, because David HaMelech comes from Rus, who is from Moab. And Naama HaAmonis, she comes from Ammon, and she marries Shlomo. So we know that their women not only should join or can join, but we needed them. So what's the difference between the men and the women? If the nation is banned, how come the women aren't banned? So the Gemara tells us, because it is the way of men to be yotzim, to be going outers. It is not the way of women to be going outers. You can't blame the women for not coming out to offer bread and water to the Jewish people who are passing along their frontiers. Because it is not the way of women to be going outers. And therefore, they can't be blamed for it. But the men, it is the way of men to be a going outer. And therefore, since they didn't do it when they should have, they are banned from joining the Jewish people. So this concept of being a Yotzei, it's not simply a privilege that one gender has and one gender doesn't. It is an expectation that we have on one gender to be a going outer, and on the other gender to not be a going outer. You don't get to choose what you want to do. If you're a man, you're expected to be a going outer. If you're a woman, you're expected not to be a going outer. That's the way the Torah presents the two sides of being a yotzei. Yes, I see your hand up. No. Yeah.
So in these times, what does it mean to?
Okay, so that's what we have to define. You're right, 100%. But before we get to these times, let's understand what's going on over here with Leah. Okay. Now, Leah was a Yatsanis. She went out to Yaakov. Now, it's very curious. Did she do anything wrong by going out to Yaakov? What happened over there? Yaakov apparently had a system of where he divided up his time with his various wives. That particular night had been designated for Rachel. Rachel and Leah had cut a deal, and they traded. Fine. Yaakov is coming back from the field. He knows nothing about this deal. Where would he have naturally gone that night? To Rachel's tent. Leah then goes and meets him. She heads him off at the pass, as they say. She meets him and says, "No, don't go that way. Come this way to my tent." Chazal tell us, the Medrash says, Leah was actually doing a tremendous chesed, a great kindness, in going out then. Why? Because had Yaakov gone to Rachel's tent, could you imagine the pain that Rachel would have felt had Yaakov gone to her tent and then Leah said to him, "No, come to my tent," actually pulled him out of Rachel's tent? Or Rachel would have had to tell him, "No, go somewhere else"? That's not a pleasant experience. That's not nice. Leah, as an act of chesed, of kindness to her co-wife, to Rachel, to her sister, prevented Yaakov from going first to Rachel's tent so that he would go to Leah's tent and not cause Rachel that extra pain of having her husband actually physically removed from her tent. So here, this act of yitzia, of going out, was a kindness, was a chesed that Leah did for her sister Rachel.
Was this the payback for the signs?
It's not the payback, but it is where Rachel had done chesed for her. It is true that now Leah is demonstrating chesed for her sister Rachel, and that's true. What's that? Well, Rachel couldn't have been. Rachel knew.
No.
I mean, she knew that Yaakov was going to go to her tent,
right.
But she also knew that Leah had switched with her, so she would have figured out that Leah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It had to happen because the tribes of Torah were going to be born now,
right.
And Torah has to be Torah's chesed.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be chesed. Okay. So here you have this act of yitzia, of going out on the part of a woman, which was an act of chesed. Leah is not faulted for what she did. What she did was correct, good, right, and kind. The thing is this. What she did was, and I'll use a term which is a funny term to use over here, was unorthodox. What she did was against the grain. It was not acting as the typical woman acts. Now that's fine when it's called for. We all have to do things that are exceptions at times. Sometimes you have to do things that aren't the normal way, because that's what the situation calls for. But it has to be borne in mind that it is not the normal way. And I want to give you an example, and this is going to take a little bit of time, and I realize we still have to come back to what does it mean to be a Yatsanis, and how do we apply it today? I'm not forgetting about that. But I want to give you an example, an important example, so we understand where this is coming from. Now, this example is in the book of Shoftim, which I hope we will get to. But by the time we get there, I'll be able to repeat this whole class without a problem. Okay. So, in the book of Shoftim, we know that there were various judges who ruled Israel. They didn't really rule, but they led the Jewish people. Between the time of Yehoshua, of Joshua, and the kings, starting with Shaul, with Saul, between that time, we had Shoftim. We had judges. The judges were almost all male, but there was one exception. Okay, Devorah. Devorah was the exception. She was the female Shofetes. She was the female judge. Now we know there is a rule, a law, on the books, that a king, a Jewish king, must be male. You cannot have a Jewish queen. Now we did have a Jewish queen actually, but that Jewish queen was not according to the law. That Jewish queen was? Was what? Okay, Queen Esther. She was a Jewish queen. I meant she was a queen who was Jewish. And I meant a Jewish queen, I mean a
Isabel.
Isabel was a queen of, she was just
the wife of
what? Izeva was the wife of Achav. Achav was the king. She didn't rule on her own.
So we have a queen.
Atalia.
Atalia.
Atalia? Okay, that's true. But she was, okay, you're right. Okay, that's true. When everybody was killed out, she did rule. That's true. Atalia did rule. Okay? It's another story in the Book of Kings, which you can go to. We had also but that was an evil woman who had taken over and killed everybody. Right. We also have a story of Hilni Hamalka, in the reign of the Hashmonaim, after the Hanukkah story, at one point over there is a woman who rules. But again, that is not according to the law. The whole dynasty of the Hashmonaim was not according to law. So, but according to Jewish law, you cannot have a Jewish queen. You must have a Jewish king. His wife is a queen, but you have to have, the king has to be Jewish, has to be male. But with the Shoftim, with the judges, Devorah becomes a judge. She's the judge. Now, here you have an enigma to deal with. And the question is this. How could Devorah have been a judge? What are we to say over here? Is it permitted to have a woman judge? Apparently yes, because Devorah was the judge. Fine. Then how come it only happened once? Why did it only happen once? There were more than a dozen judges. There's 50% of the population is male, and 50% is female, roughly. So why was it that only one judge out of more than 12, 13, 14, 15 judges, only one was female? What are we to say? Are we going to say that they weren't qualified? Are we going to say that, generally speaking, the women simply weren't qualified to be judges? and what Devorah was the only woman who was qualified, it's difficult to say that. Why was it that she was the only qualified woman and all the other ones weren't qualified? She just happened to be the only one who made it?
Her husband didn't want to rise
for the occasion. What's that?
Her husband did not want to rise for the occasion.
That's correct. We read the story of Devorah as the Haftorah for Parashas Beshalach. So if you turn to page 1152... Devorah is the judge. And Hashem tells her to tell her husband Barak that he is to wage a war against Sisera. Sisera is the general.
Barak.
Her husband is Barak. And what's her name? What's her name? What's his wife's name? Michelle. Okay. No. Sorry, it doesn't work. All right. So, she tells them that Hashem told her to tell her husband Barak that he should wage a war against Sisera, who was the general of the Canaanim, the Canaanites, who were at that time oppressing the Jewish people. And she tells him you're supposed to go and raise an army and then go and attack Sisera. Which was a very difficult thing to do because the Jewish people were far less powerful than the Canaanim. They were under the oppression of the Canaanim. They didn't have weapons like the Canaanim had. And yet, he's supposed to do it, and Hashem is going to help him beat the Canaanim. In Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayomer Eleha Barak, Barak says to her, to his wife Devorah, Im telchi imi vehalachti, if you come with me, I will go. But if you won't go with me, I won't go. Now this means his wife told him, Hashem said, you're to raise an army and go start a war. And he says, if you go with me, I'll go. If you don't go with me, I won't go. Barak was a great tzaddik. Is he doubting God? What is he saying over here? If you go with me, I'll go. If you don't go with me, I won't go. He's making his listening to God conditional on his wife coming with him?
He's doubting his wife.
Maybe. Look at the next pasuk. Look at Tess.
He's not an Al Gore.
Vatomer, and she said, Haloch eleich imach. I'll go with you. Efes, however, ki lo siya tifartecha al haderach asher atahaleich. Your glory will not be on the road that you're going to go. Ki biad isha yimkar Hashem es Sisera. For at the hands of a woman, God will give over Sisera. So Devorah got up and she went with Barak to Kadesh. So Devorah says back to him, okay, you want me to go with you? Fine. But you just lost it. You had the chance to have glory on this road, but now you won't get the glory. And not only that, it'll come in the hands of a woman. So she said that, right? It's like a slap in the face. Not only will it not be you, but it won't even be another man. It's going to come in the hands of a woman. She's going to be the one to beat Sisera. Who was it in the end? Yeah. Who's the woman who beat Sisera? It's Yael. Yeah. A different woman, not Devorah. A different woman, Yael. She's the one who defeats Sisera. What's the story? We're not going to read through the whole story. Many of you are familiar with it. Barak decimates Sisera's army. Sisera gets out of his chariot and runs away. Barak chases after Sisera. Sisera passes by the tent of Yael. Sisera is a very powerful man. And Yael says to Sisera, why don't you come into my tent? I'll protect you in here. And so Sisera then veers off the road and gets into Yael's tent, where she says she's going to protect him. In the end, though, she doesn't protect him. She eventually gets him to go to sleep. And then she takes the peg of the tent peg, she takes a hammer and she bangs the hammer into Sisera's head. Right through his head. And she kills him. And then, as Barak is passing by, Yael comes out and says, You want to see the guy who you're chasing after? Here he is. And he's already dead. So Yael took care of him. So that's the fulfillment of what Devorah said. Because you wanted me to go with you, it's going to come at the hands of a woman. So what's going on in here? But because, what is this? It's like a in your face. You know, you didn't want to do it. It's going to come in the hands of a woman. What do you say to that? You know, it's like, what kind of, is this like an immature kind of, battle of the genders? What is this over here? So what's happening over here is as follows. You see, Devorah was obviously qualified to be a shofetess. Throughout the years, the 350 years of the period of the judges, there were other women who were qualified to be judges. It wasn't that Devorah was the only qualified woman. That wasn't the case. The reason why Devorah was an exception is because she was the only qualified woman who lived at a time when there was no qualified man. That's the difference. You see, the rest of the time, there were plenty of qualified women, but there were also plenty of qualified men. And when you have both qualified men and qualified women, the leader must be a man. You cannot put a leader as a woman when there is a qualified man. Because being a leader is being a yotze. It's being a going outer. The leader is in the spotlight. The leader is in the forefront. And therefore, since it means being a yotze, it means a going outer, when there's a qualified man and a qualified woman, you have to have the qualified man be the leader, be the judge. Okay. In Devorah's time, there were no qualified men. And therefore, she became the shofetess. So she was not the exception. It was the men of her time that were the exception. So she was the judge. And she led the Jewish people. Now came time for a war. And she says to her husband Barak, who was also a great man, she said to him, Hashem has told me you're to raise an army and start a war. So Barak says, if you go with me, I'll go. If you don't go with me, I won't go. What is he saying over here? He's saying, Devorah, you are the judge. The role of the judge throughout the period of judges was to lead the war. Not just to lead the people in peace, not just to rule on different matters, but to lead the wars. All the judges led wars. They all did. So he says to her, you're the judge. I can't go without you. You're the judge. You need to lead this war. Devorah says back to Barak, evidently you don't understand what it means to have a woman as a leader, as a judge. You don't understand how much of an exception to the rule I am. You think that because I'm the leader, I should perform every function of leadership. What you don't understand is that a woman should not be the leader unless there is no qualified man. Yes, it's true, there's no qualified man for the peacetime leadership. There's no qualified man to rule on general issues over here. But there is a qualified man to lead the battle. And if there's a qualified man to lead the battle, which you are, then the woman has to now step back and have the man take over the leadership for the war. Because it is such an unusual exception to put me in the front of things, to put me in the spotlight, that therefore if there's any aspect of my job that can be delegated to a man, it must be so. But evidently you don't get it. And she said, Barak, if you don't get it, and you're one of the greatest men that living today, then most probably, most of the people don't get it either. And therefore, there's going to have to be a lesson taught in this battle about what the real role of a woman is. Because what's going to happen is, Sisera is going to be destroyed, not by a man, and not by a woman who is acting like a man. He's going to be defeated by a woman acting like a woman. We're going to show here, Yael is going to be that example of the real way a woman is supposed to act. Because Devorah says, the way I'm acting is not real. Yes, I have to do it because there is no qualified man, but I'm the exception. Like Leah going out to meet Yaakov, which she had to do, but that was the exception. That's not the way a woman is supposed to act typically. And we need that example to be something which is going to be plastered across the headlines. This is the way a woman is supposed to act. And so Yael destroys Sisera. How does she destroy Sisera? Does she destroy him out on the field in the middle of battle? No. In her tent. Inside, not outside. She's not a going outer. She stands at the doorway of her tent. She doesn't even step outside. And she calls Sisera, and Sisera comes into the tent. Not only that, Chazal say to us, why did she kill Sisera with the peg of the tent? Why didn't she use a sword? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier to take a sword and just put it through his head or his heart or his neck? Why does she take the peg of the tent? The Gemara says, well, she wouldn't pick up a sword because a sword was something that was only carried by men. Therefore, it is like beged ish. It's like a garment which is only worn by men. And we know that men's garments are not supposed to be worn by women, and women's garments are not supposed to be worn by men. This is an expansion on that law, that something which is designated only for men should not be used by a woman. Something designated only for women should not be used by men. Therefore, she didn't want to pick up a sword, because that was something that only men used. There were no women didn't carry swords. Therefore, she specifically picked up a sharp object that was not a sword. In fact, it was the peg of the tent, to underscore the fact that she was in the tent, not outside. Yael is compared to Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Minashim ba'ohel tevorach. From the women in the tent, she is blessed. That is what Yael stands for. Devorah says to Barak, this war is going to have to be won by a woman acting as a woman, not taking the role of a man. I'm going to get to the questions in a minute. Leah here had to do something which was man-like. She had to be a going outer. And it was correct for her to do so. But it was an exception. And exceptions have to be used sparingly. You can't use exceptions on a general basis. What Chazal are pointing out to us is, Idina didn't do anything wrong. She didn't. She wasn't a going outer to do something immoral. She wasn't a going outer. She wasn't going out to see the men of the land. She was going out to see the girls, to see what was going on around there. But nevertheless, she was acting like her mother as a yatsanis, as a going outer. And that going out, whatever you want to say, that yitzia can only be done when the situation absolutely calls for it, but not just because. And so, therefore, they do place blame at her feet. It's a very, very minor, subtle point. She didn't do anything terrible. She didn't even do anything. You wouldn't even say she did. She didn't do a sin. She didn't do an Aveira. But she still acted in a way should not have been used except when absolutely necessary. That's what Chazal tell us over here about Leah's, about Dina's behavior. Yaakov is also blamed over here. How is Yaakov blamed? Because in the previous story, when Yaakov's family meets Esav, he introduces Esav to his four wives. He introduces Esav to his 11 sons. What happened to Dina? Dina wasn't introduced to Esav.
He hid her.
Yaakov hid Dina. Says he put her in a box and hid her from Esav. He didn't want that evil man Esav looking at Dina and having designs on his daughter Dina. Chazal tell us that Hashem figuratively said to Yaakov, maybe if Esav would have seen Dina, perhaps he would have wanted to marry her. And then perhaps Dina, using the powers of persuasion of a woman, might have gotten Esav to mend his ways. Perhaps Dina would have had a positive effect on Esav and brought him back. You, Yaakov, you didn't let your daughter marry properly. You didn't let her perhaps have a positive effect on Esav. You kept her away from Esav. Then I'm using this word very very relatively, your punishment will be that your daughter will be taken by somebody with against your will, when you should have allowed her to be seen by Esav and perhaps to marry him. As a result, you're going to lose her against your will. Now,
that's a severe punishment.
Wait, listen. Does that mean that anything could have happened to Dina without Dina's own contribution? No, because Hashem isn't going to punish one person by hurting somebody else. What this means is that the pasuk says, "Hatsur tamim pa'alo." God's ways are perfect, which means any time something happens to one person and it affects other people, all those people went into the calculation. God doesn't forget about the fact that other people are going to be hurt when one person gets hurt. In our courts, we can't do that. If there's someone who murders and they're convicted of murder, we put them to death. Do we take into account that his wife is going to be a widow? Do we take into account that his children are going to be orphans? Do we take into account that whatever projects or things he was involved in will now not get done? No. He's a murderer. He has to be put to death. Hashem is not like that. Hashem takes everything into account. And so over here, if Shechem's act of treachery is going to hurt Dina, there must have been some small, tiny measure of culpability that Dina has. And if Shechem's act of treachery is going to hurt Yaakov, there must be some small, minor act of culpability that you can place at Yaakov's feet. That's what Chazal are telling us. If you want to use percentages, what Shechem did, he was responsible for 99.99999% of the act. Dina was responsible for 0.0001, and Yaakov was responsible for 0.0001. That's the way to understand what Chazal are telling us. The lesson should not be lost, though. There is a lesson over here. There's a lesson about Yatsanis, and there's a lesson about the responsibility to try to bring Esav back in a way that may work. There was no guarantee that Dina would have brought Esav back, but you can't underestimate the possibility of that, as I said before, the power of persuasion of a woman. So this is what Chazal tell us over here. Now, I know there are questions, but I still have to get to what it means to be a Yatsanis today. How do we deal with it today? Society today is so topsy-turvy. So much of today is not like it was before. The whole system of how the world works is completely different. How do we apply what is being said over here to our daily lives? But I will take a question or two, but only if it's a short answer, because we don't want to get far afield. So, go ahead.
I'm surprised how could be question about Dina to marry Esav. Dina was younger than 13 years old. Esav was older than 100 years old. How can you put together this girl of 13 years old and man over 100?
You knew who Dina was. I mean, I'm saying she was like all the children of Yaakov. They were, you know, they were beyond their years. And apparently, he wouldn't have been held responsible if it wasn't possible for there to have been something good coming out of him. Apparently, she was a very, very special woman. We have to conclude that. Yeah.
There's so much here. But anyway, first of all, Maria cried. She said, please, Hashem, I don't want to marry that man. She begged, she pleaded, she cried. She's known as a woman that whose eyes
right.
are red from tears.
Right, right.
Yaakov is going to let Leah's
good.
Daughter
excellent.
Marry the
excellent.
Man that she...
Excellent.
It's beyond conception.
Excellent.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. That
excellent happens, question.
But it's from my modeling.
Excellent question.
Even my daughter is going to marry the man I cried. That I would never believe God saved me from this man?
What about her reputation or her...
The difference is this. Excellent point. The difference is this. Leah cried not to marry Esav before the whole episode with Yaakov and Esav's angel. This is after Yaakov and Esav's angel. Esav has been defeated. Not defeated now, but ultimately it's been demonstrated that he's not going to win, and Esav knows it. there was, at this moment, as we said, Yaakov and Esav embraced. And even though Esav typically despises Yaakov, but here was a genuine love. This was the one moment when Esav was vulnerable. He was vulnerable to Teshuvah at this moment. It was a time that had never happened before and would not happen again. This was the only possible moment where there might have been a way to get through to that heart of his. Beyond all those layers of evil that had built up in Esav, there had been a piercing directly to his heart. And now it was possible. Not definite, but possible. And so here it could have happened. Now you could say, how could Yaakov have known that? If he's held accountable, remember, we don't want to underestimate Yaakov. If he was held accountable, then apparently he could have understood that. And he probably did, but still felt it shouldn't be done. And nevertheless, on Yaakov's level, there is an accountability. As we said, when we deal with the quote-unquote sins of the righteous, we're dealing with a subtlety, a very, very, very minor subtlety, that for us would not be a sin at all. But because of who they are, and because of their perception, and their understanding of how things work, they are held accountable. Kechut ha-saira, like a hair's breadth between right and wrong. Yes?
I don't know where I heard it from. Was Dina fascinated or interested with the Goyish women around her, like what they were up to? Or?
Well, you're asking a question, why did she want to see about the girls of the land? Okay, that's a good question. And perhaps we'll tackle that next time, because we have to discuss next time what happens to Dina in the end, after this whole episode. And what about the fact that Shechem tried to convince Dina to stay with him? So we have to go through, we'll have to discuss that. So how do we apply this whole concept of Yatsonis to today? It seems like you can't even begin to apply it today. Women are in every aspect of society. And even if our Torah says that it is not the proper way for a woman to be, but the fact is that's what it is. So, and we live in this society. So how does it then manifest itself? So the answer is, and it's not an answer that anybody here is going to like, because it's not going to give a clear-cut answer. It's a very subjective answer. And that is that exactly as we learned tonight, that a woman has to know that her role is meant to be inside. Kol kvuda bas melech pnima. The honor of a daughter of a king, of a princess, is on the inside. That's where her role really is. But we have so many things calling that we must go out today. Women work. Women have to be out there doing all kinds of things. But we need to bear in mind that it's the exception and not the rule. We live in a time, unlike in the time of Yaakov, where there was an exception for one woman. Leah was the one, that one time that was the exception. We live in an era of exception. This is a time of exception. But we have to remember that it's an exception. It has an effect in subtle ways. When a woman remembers that it's only an exception, then when there is the possibility of not being a going outer, then she doesn't. Whereas if she doesn't look at it as an exception, she looks at it as the rule or as the norm, then there's no reason for not to be a quote-unquote going outer. This notion of knowing what the truth really is, despite the fact that we live a life of exception, doesn't only apply to women. It applies to men, it applies to us in many, many ways, us Jews. It applies to us in many, many ways. A doctor, a surgeon, who has to go to the hospital on Shabbos, has to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, and Shabbos after Shabbos after Shabbos after Shabbos after Shabbos has to go and drive to the hospital on Shabbos. He may have to do it for 50 out of 52 weeks of the year, but he still has to remember that it's the exception, it's not the rule. He has to bear in mind, I'm only doing this because the situation calls for it. But it is not the rule, it's the exception. There are many types of things like that for us in today's day and age. The interaction that men and women have in our society is an interaction that far exceeds what used to be. Far exceeds what used to be. The whole concept of interaction between men and women has been turned on its head. And again, we have to bear in mind that this is an exception, it's not the rule. So although we do need to act within society as we are expected to act, but at the same time, we have to remember that it's an exception. And it's not the way that it's meant to be. The difference is not so much in practice, it's much more in attitude. And therefore, there are subtle differences that happen. It's late. I would love to give you more. I can give you several examples, but it's already 5 minutes overtime right now. So we're going to leave it at this right now. The story of Dinah here, we still have a lot more to do. But right now, we're going to leave it with the two lessons of Yatsanis and the lesson of looking for the opportunity to bring someone back to Teshuvah.